Well, here is a troubling fact. The infant mortality rate in Michigan has been persistently higher than the national average. Add to that the fact that a baby born to a black mother in our state is almost three times more likely to die before its first birthday than a baby born to a white mother. Health experts look at these numbers and they tell us, using a three-year moving average for Michigan's mortality rate for African-American babies, we're behind every advanced nation, tucked between countries like Malaysia and Syria. Joining me here in the studio is Arlene Geronimus. She's a professor of health behavior and health education at the University of Michigan. She also works with the Institute for Social Research. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And joining us from Detroit is Brenda Jagaday. She's the project coordinator for PRIME. That stands for Practice to Reduce Infant Mortality Through Equity, and it's with the Michigan Department of Community Health. Brenda, welcome to Stateside.
Hello. Thank you.
Good to have you both with us. Arlene, you have been observing and studying this problem of Michigan's infant mortality rate and the disparity between white babies and babies of color for decades, and even 30 years ago, you advanced a hypothesis to explain this disparity. What did you mean by weathering, which at the time was not met with very much support?
The weathering hypothesis was suggesting that women in different, what I would call social locations, and I'll explain that in a moment, age at different rates. And by age, I'm not talking about just aging of the elderly as we think of it, but even through youth and young adulthood. And so that groups in more marginalized social locations, so that would include African Americans, it would include people in high poverty communities, mm-hmm. it would include a whole range of different groups, but I have focused the most in this particular problem we're talking about is most clear in the African American population, mm-hmm. that they begin to develop diseases and conditions at younger ages and startling younger ages than women in more privileged positions. And these conditions affect pregnancy. Some of them that people are familiar with, such as high blood pressure, are one of the biggest risk factors for having a poor birth outcome. And I described rates of hypertension among black women that were not just higher than white, which many people already knew, but that the age dimension of that disparity enlarged exactly over the reproductive ages. And so if you think about hypertension or high blood pressure as, first of all, a stress-related disease, you can begin to understand why groups who have less and who are subject to racism or other types of marginalization would have more exposure to and need to cope actively with stressors. If you then realize that there's less medical care available to these very same women, and then if you add to it that it's the leading cause of stillbirths and neonatal mortality, the early mm-hmm. infant
early,
mortality,
yes.
You can see kind of this convergence of situations where it makes a very big difference what the rates of chronic disease are in young adult, reproductive age women.
Mm-hmm. Brenda Jagaday, there you are, working with Practice to Reduce Infant Mortality Through Equity with PRIME. One's first inclination might be to think that education and poverty are the explanation behind the difference in infant mortality rates, but you are working in the field with people. Why is that not true?
Well, I would say that we definitely believe that education and what we call those social determinants of health do have a definite factor, but we're looking at all of those things as we talked about those social determinants of health. When Arlene was talking, it made me think about that. And what we've been looking at is also what we call the life course, where we're trying to look and see in terms of impacting health outcomes, not just looking at that 9 months of pregnancy, but looking at the lifetime health of a woman to be able to impact those health outcomes. So we've, in the Practices to Reduce Infant Mortality Through Equity Project, we've been trying to understand concepts like health equity and institutional racism and how that plays into the policies and procedures that we develop at the state level and how that impacts women and families and their health outcomes.
So what does that institutional racism and the inequities that you're speaking of, what does that look like in everyday life, Brenda?
When we, you know, talk about institutional racism, which was a whole, you know, process for us at, the State Health Department, we went through a series of training, one from the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond. We went to their Undoing Racism training, and we also participated in Ingham County Health Department's Health Equity and Social Justice workshops. So we're looking at trying to do business different. You know, how can we do things differently than we have in the past? Because as we stated, for decades, several decades, we haven't reduced those racial disparities. So we're looking at the conditions, the social, the economic conditions in which people live, and looking at how that impacts their health.
So we say, I think I'm hearing, you can have a mom who's 30 years old, she's well-educated, she makes good mm-hmm. money, she's African-American, and then you have the same mom and she's white, and the African-American mom still has a higher chance of infant death. Arlene, what does that say about Michigan in 2013?
Well, it says that we don't understand yet that true equality isn't just about if you have a certain education or income. That, in fact, there are other factors that affect your health in particular and stress-related diseases and poor birth outcomes that come from the fact that that 30-year-old black woman probably or is more likely to have had to work much harder to get where she is, has to work harder to achieve as much, is probably paid less than someone else, and then has may or may not have the same opportunities in terms of promotions, glass ceilings instead of promotions, or even places to live because we have a very segregated, residentially segregated areas in Michigan and throughout the United States, but Michigan and Detroit in particular, it's very segregated. And so in addition to all the various kind of direct or material ways that that will affect that black woman versus the white woman, it also means the black woman is dealing on a kind of psychosocial level. So that takes a lot of energy, both psychic energy, but it's also just literally physiologically activates stress processes in people that then erode, cause weathering, cause wear and tear on a whole range of body systems, lead to dysregulated blood pressure, blood sugar, both of which are very risky in terms of reproductive health. And then the last part I just want to put in here is that it is more likely that this white 30-year-old woman has grown up in a community, in a background, which is socialized to kind of fit in and understand, to kind of get the memos without having those memos have to be written. Black women and other marginalized groups, immigrants, poor white women who have been upwardly mobile, a whole range of what I'm calling marginalized groups.
They're not getting
those
memos.
Didn't get the memo, right. And they don't, not quite sure if when they're not understanding something or fitting in, it's because they're making some big mistakes or they just didn't get a memo or what's it about. And all of that can cause stress reactivity.
I would just add, when you mentioned the memo, it just made me think that the memo wasn't written for them. You know, sometimes populations of color, when you just look at our history, so a lot of our policies and procedures and the way we do business wasn't necessarily based on our populations, you know, of color. And when you were mentioning the importance of education, and I would say, you know, education and income, how we know the data tells us that you do better, you live longer, the better educated you are, the more income that you have. However, you know, when you look at, you know, the data that shows that an African-American woman with a higher education, with a college education, has poorer birth outcomes than a white woman who hasn't finished high school, you have to start asking yourself questions. Well, why is that? What's happening?
And what needs to be, I guess what we really want to take away is especially here you are working with the Michigan Department of Community Health, Brenda, with this PRIME project. What needs to be done to close that gap?
I would say one of the things that we're doing is, one, making ourselves aware that it's not just these individual behaviors to, you know, understand the impact that stress has on populations of color. So we've started looking at our policies and procedures. So I want to give an example, like one example when people think about institutional. What do you mean by institutional? And I think about the fact that we were able to do our first state standalone PRAMS in the Native American community. And this is a survey of all mothers who deliver, and we really look at this survey to tell us a lot about their health and how we can reduce infant mortality and adverse birth outcomes. But we find that because a population such as the Native Americans is such a small population, that we really don't get information on them to be able to even know what to do in terms of implementing programs, developing programs for them. So in partnering with our Intertribal Council of Michigan, they've helped us to understand how they've had to use some alternative methods to better, you know, describe the maternal child health of the Native American community. And one method that they used was looking at the race of a mother or a father as recorded as Native American on the birth certificate. This is not our policy. This is not how we do business. And there's a whole lot of reasons why, which are understandable. However, when we do this and just go about our normal way of doing things, we neglect to get the information that we need. And so in just looking at this alternative policy, we were able to get 108% increase in the sampling size to women that we could send the survey to in Michigan. So that's 1,300 more women that we might find out information about and actually be able to develop some programming around them. So that's an example of trying to do something different to close the gaps.
Arlene Geronimus, from where you sit, what do you think needs to be done in terms of educating healthcare providers? What do healthcare providers need to be shown and taught and do differently than has been done in the past?
I think there's several things. I think one of the things in terms of clinical care is there's also just a dynamic between the clinician and the pregnant woman. And that dynamic itself, that interaction between them, can have implications for her health and her pregnancy. Not just did he pick up the right diagnosis and give the right treatment, but how did he or she ask the right questions? Did they make the person feel comfortable? Did they just assume that they must have some bad behaviors or bad cultural practices that are causing if they're having problems? Do they think about whether the recommendations they make for them are ones that can be fulfilled? Are there places to go buy the foods they need to eat to have a healthy pregnancy? I think also we have to open up the social determinants, not only to include what I'm calling, I guess, is psychosocial, the things that raise these stress levels, but also there's more and more evidence of environmental impacts on birth outcomes. And this is another version of institutionalized racism to some extent, which is the areas in which our segregation has occurred in Michigan have tended to segregate people of color, not only in low-income communities, but places where there's lots of diesel fuel, where there's high lead level concentrations, where there's very little access to healthy foods, but lots of access to fast foods or to liquor stores. So one of the striking things, I think, in Michigan is while the black rate has remained the highest and white infant mortality has been catching up in some places.
Brandy,
yeah, I would definitely agree just in terms of looking at a population, you know, looking at population health versus individual health and, you know, how sometimes we will say, or, you know, some researchers have said, you know, I can tell you more so about your health and your life expectancy if you give me your zip code versus your DNA code. That really may not, you know, tell me as much as that will, because we're looking at all those things, you know, in addition to education and employment, but housing and transportation, you know, all of those things that impact health. And one of the things that we've learned from our local learning collaborative, the importance of partnering with the organizations in their community that provide all of the services around transportation, housing, education, or, you know, jobs, things of that nature, that that had to take place in order to overall improve the health of those within their communities and for them to have the best health outcomes.
My final question, and I really like the thoughts of both of you. I'll start with you, Arlene. Let's go ahead 5 to 10 years. What kind of conversation do you hope or do you think we'll be having about infant mortality in Michigan?
Well, given how entrenched this problem has been for so many decades, unfortunately, we will probably still be having a conversation about how the rates are too high for anybody in Michigan, and the disparities are too great. But I guess what I would hope would be different from the past is that there's an evolution towards understanding you need to look at population level and not just individual behavior. You have to think about women's health throughout their life course and not just the 9 months they're pregnant. That clinical interventions matter, but they're actually a very small piece, and so we should be putting more effort into some of these broader social and environmental issues.
And from where you sit, Brenda Jagaday, give me a sense of what you hope we'll be talking about in 5 to 10 years.
That is hard, but in 5 to 10 years, I would love to see that we have made some progress in terms of reducing the racial disparities. And as Arlene said, you know, more around population health, discussions around programming around population health, funding in that area, and looking at the life course. So just making people healthy from the onset. I think we, you know, will have such tremendous gain if we made that change. Also, within the department, I would like to see that in that time period, these concepts are no longer new for us. They're second nature, that when we're looking at our programming, our policies, and our procedures, that, you know, this is something that we automatically do, and that we're not as uncomfortable talking about race, because a lot of times we bring race in it. It opens up a whole another can of worms that I think we continue to deal with in this country.
I've been speaking with Brenda Jagaday. She's the project coordinator for PRIME, which stands for Practice to Reduce Infant Mortality Through Equity, and it's with the Michigan Department of Community Health. She joined us from Detroit. And Arlene Geronimus, professor of health behavior and health education at the University of Michigan. She joined us in the studio. Thank you so much to both of you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.